We've taken our love of standees even further. Welcome to One Dimensional Gaming.
Fortified Niche.
Hey, welcome to Fortified Niche. I'm Kassa, joined by Dent, everyone as always. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/fortifiedniche. We're covering yet another cool release from the Lock and Load Tactical Digital series, as expected from our fans. This time we were talking about the Heroes Against the Red Star, which is weird to me, because surely the heroes were under the Red Star, were they not?
Well, it is a World War III module, and as people who, with a passing knowledge of miniature games, will tell you, whenever they make a World War III game, they're always basing it on the worst book from the American perspective of the speculative Uncanned Sunshine conflict. And also, hi, JC Dent here.
Well, they can't really base it on reality. If they base it on reality, all that happens is everything glows and it sucks. Game ends immediately. Turn one, everyone gets nuked. Turn two, I don't know, roll for secondary nuke arrival time.
Well, this is where the game helps you a lot, because there are other modules in it. Like, we know that starter modules has two Vietnam scenarios and two World War II scenarios. But if you really drill down into the DLC trove, you can get the Heroes of Falklands DLC, which is the lowest stake, biggest expenditure war, I guess, in the during the Cold War.
It even has what if scenarios, which is very fun. Fun.
Yeah, there's a what if scenario in the Falklands War, like what if the Argentines didn't give up and they had to do bloody house-to-house fighting. How do they call it? Fish and chips, fighting in someone's home and causing havoc in people's streets. Yeah, that's how the British call urban warfare. So, well, Heroes Against the Red Star is entirely fictitious what-if scenarios, including such gems as World War II retirees rolling out the King Tigers, another World War II surplus in Belgium to fight off the invading Soviets. So that's cool.
I mean, those late war heavy tanks wouldn't have been great, but they would have been better than, you know, being shot by machine guns.
I mean, they probably have about as much armor protection as Leo 1. Ayo!
Or your classic T-55s.
Well, No, but to explain the joke to Cass and some other people, Leopard 1 was the Cold War tank that the Germans made with the idea that armor is obsolete and only speed matters. And then T-55 rolled out and it turns out that armor was not, in fact, obsolete.
Yeah, we can have both, it turns out.
Yeah, so yeah, Lock and Load Tactical Digital is the digital adaptation to digital adaptation of our beloved Hex and Chit game, Lock and Load Tactical. It's been in early access for quite some time. The early access message on Steam still says that it's expected that the game will be launched in 18 months, and more than 18 months have passed since that point, the game keeps getting developed. They're continuously doing new patches, and the game has been in production since April 2022. At least it was released into early access in April 2020, which is, hey, what was happening around the world back in those days? I wonder if there was some sort of global catastrophe that could have somewhat delayed the release of the game.
I sure said inside a lot, that was true.
Everyone was rediscovering the great outdoors, and like staying home and doing anything video game related was a no-starter. So that's why. Hopefully they'll return home one of these days and get back to developing the game, because even today, playing it with multiplayer, you run into some issues that you wouldn't run into if you were playing live, as we normally do with Casa. We get together and we play all these hex and shit games. Last week, we just finished our large campaign of 1985 Beneath an Iron Sky. But yeah, as you know, we are not that big of a fan of divisional level games. And even if that was an excellent game, we wanted something on a much lower scale. And as you know from our previous reviews, where we are big fans of other lock and load offerings, like World at War 85. It's a great thing, but then again, you're not pushing around like infantry squads in that one, and HQs are kind of abstract like in Beneath Iron Sky. So we've gone to the lowest possible end of it. Lock and load, tactical digital. Here you control squad sergeants, captains, majors, as well as squads and half squads and heroes and individual vehicles. Basically any battlefield from World War II to World War III, though I guess the most chronologically the newest warfare would be the Day of the Jackal module, which takes you to Libya while Gaddafi was still alive, yeah. But not long for this world. Okay, it's called Days of Villainy, not Days of the Jackal. Jackal is the Soviet-Afghan War module. So yeah, the Days of Villainy, and before that, you could also play Day of Heroes, a wonderfully named module for the Black Hawk Down stuff.
Some interesting periods to cover, and which obviously I say interesting with the same caveat we added to like Force on Force of like these are living memory conflicts, and a lot of them weren't like as black and or white. Really, no conflict is, but for the most part, the game does shy away from asymmetrical warfare. It does seem to be more interested in like equivalent forces combating each other. Even the Vietnam stuff was, you know, not known for its stand-up fights. It still was the level you're at. It's still similar amounts of people engaging with each other.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you could say that Soviet-Afghan war and Vietnam is asymmetric and stuff, but at the level where this game operates, it's like, you know, you're throwing a platoon against a platoon and may the best platoon win. You don't really have the option to always call in napalm and finish your problems that way.
Randomly call a mortar strike or an airstrike in on the one pit building you pick out of random and take out your opponent's entire force turn one.
I didn't take out your entire force. I merely shook them.
Yeah, you're right. It was so fun to push space for an hour. Skip turn. Oh, skip turn. Yep, skip turn. Okay, skip turn. Wow, exciting. Exciting choices.
So to go deeper into the gameplay in lock and load, tactical, digital, and I guess to explain somewhat how the non-digital version works, it has alternating activations, and you either activate single group of dudes or a single chit, or if you have an officer, you can activate dudes in his hex and in the hexes surrounding them. So, and this is the preferable way to move multiple chits of troops, because as we all learned when we were doing the Advanced Squad Leader episode, moving as a stack and getting shot as a stack is very, very bad. It was, and it's not great in this game. The only time you'd want to stack multiple people, I mean, multiple chits, is when you want heroes or commanders with the troops, and there are reasons to have them, because regular infantry squads do not self rally. They need to have an officer, maybe sometimes a hero or something stacked with them. But yeah, Vehicles in this game do self-rally because, like, you know, it's a given that there's an officer inside the vehicle shouting at the other guys that we have to move towards the sounds of violence.
Keep moving until something stops shooting rockets at us.
So yeah, most of the time it's a D6 based game. You roll a single D6 and you try to roll under a target number. So lower is always better. This tripped up Cass a lot, but that's because I have a lot more experience with the game.
It was just mostly because damage is high, and like to hit rolls are low. Oh, it's just the numbers weren't consistent. Like, I just didn't pay enough attention. Like, that was my problem. Of like, why are things bad when I want things to be good?
Kind of yeah, but like, you know, in the digital version, the game itself takes care of that. You don't really have to care. It's just
incredibly fast. Like, if you sort of look away for a second, it's entirely likely, like, yeah, in between sips of cups of tea, that a full combat will resolve itself with no interaction from you or indication that, like, hey, that squad's fucked now. It's just gone. Whoops.
Yeah, you have to read the log window. Hopefully you haven't closed it, though you can always re-enable it. I'm going to say that in this aspect, as in any others, lock and load tactical digital is superior to game we once considered covering for April Fools because it was bad, Victory and Valor, or Valor and Victory, which is, I guess, another attempt to stick closer to Advanced Squad Leader to create a similar game for World War II combat. It came from Slytherin or Matrix. I have a hard time telling which one I'm supposed to say. I never liked that game, and the dice results never really made sense, even if you were like, even if they literally showed you the Matrix of what roles are supposed to be. Meanwhile, in this game, I fairly quickly got the idea of what's happening when, and
add number, get less than target. Simple.
Yeah, it's a lovely game. Like I said, alternating activations. If you move into the enemy, if you move into the sights of an unactivated enemy, they get the chance to do opportunity fire, which unfortunately makes them unable to be activated on their own turn, something Casa didn't like, because like in most of these games, your troops can either move fast, or they can fire at a reduced effect and move less, I guess.
Yeah, I'll move, normal move, or low crawl for infantry.
Yeah,
it was mostly like, if my tank shoots, it can still move unless it reactive fires and it can't move anymore, even if it's in continuous movement. Which, okay, sure, it's the convention mechanically you come around to because it's the way the game wants to work, which is, you know, their choice. It's like, but I want to do things, I want to keep doing, I'll do all the things, I want to have all the ice cream.
Yeah, I don't know if this was something we missed in the upfire thing, where you could like set tank from normal movement or fire to assault move, because you know, I have a better handle on the interface than Casa, and I've been reading all the pop-ups, and let me tell you, listeners of this podcast, about Hex and Chit War Games. I've played a lot of Combat Mission, and that game's and that series continuing insistence of not having pop-ups on anything that explains anything is extremely annoying. Meanwhile, Lock and Load puts pop-ups on basically everything, and that is extremely good. Though there is an annoying thing, and I don't know if this is an early access thing or not, is that all the interactivity of the interface and stuff goes away when it's the enemy turn. You can't even, like, go.
Ducks.
Yeah, it blows so much. You can't even go around looking at the chits or inspecting terrain or inspecting line of sight. Like, if it's not your turn, I mean, not your impulse, to use the parlance of the game, can't do anything. And it's extremely annoying. There's also some, like, say, artifacting thing from, like, loading saves or when the other player is controlling his troops, when you, like, sometimes see selections on your interface that were definitely made by the enemy player, that the game log also betrays some of the maybe stealthy information the other player would prefer you didn't know, because this might have to do like with secret troop placement at the start. Then again, a lot of this can be chalked up to early access issues, and really the inability to do anything during the enemy turn, I can't even expect my own troops, is probably the biggest downside.
I get it, but if it's just any game where your opponent is thinking a lot of, if you're doing it like we're doing it, like basically hot seating the game, and I'm waiting for you to do something or making a decision to do something, but just being able to gather information and look at what your guys are doing, trying to determine, is this tiny chit actually a tank, or is it a BIDM or a BMP, or is it just four guys with a cardboard box and like holding it up above them and then trying to work out what the tiny, tiny, tiny chits are on these chits?
Good thing you mentioned the tiny chits, because like we all know from ASL, if you want to have a tank in a game like this, you also need a chit to show the direction the turret is facing.
Quite fun. I like that a lot.
Yeah, as well as you want to have, like, you know, chits to mark such thing as continuous movement, which marks their tank as going all out, moving from turn to turn, which makes it a harder target to hit. Also various, like, already acted, moved, or something else tokens. You can't really see, you can only see them in the game, but they are so small you can't read anything that's written on them, which is a little bit annoying.
And the fact that you can't like pin the tooltip that's popped up to then zoom in further or hover over specific icons, which I understand that'd be annoying if you're hovering over like a chit on the table and it was bouncing between, like tabletop simulator style, the unit and the shocked thing, and you were like, I know it's shocked.
Yeah, but for example, I stunned a few times an Abrams of Casa, and I have no idea what stun does.
I get a turn.
The tank was shaken and stunned, and next turn came, and then the rally phase it just rallied itself, no problem. And so, no idea what it does. But all these things aside, I think it's a fun and lovely game. You get your troopers around, you shoot stuff up, your fire is degraded by stuff like wrecks and fire in a hex. Can't enter a forest, you know, good stuff.
It's a fantastic entry gate, like gateway game to this sort of gameplay, because a lot of them don't have even this level of polish.
Yeah.
Like, we talk about that automating away a lot of the information for you, but the information it still leaves, you can still make decisions. You can still see, oh, okay, I'm going to be rolling damage dice, which is 2d6, and I'm adding this much, and your armor is this much, and I can just see what the results... I can math that in my head rather than being like other games which give you numbers, and then you have to compare it to a chart, and then that chart has a grid reference to a matrix further in the book.
Yeah.
It's the third Sunday in July, and it's wet on those days in this year, but you should probably know that because you're a historical gamer, and if you don't know that offhand, then should you really be here?
Yeah, and here, like, everything, well, not everything is done for you, but it mostly is. If your tank can shoot another tank, then you're going to have a attack button on the interface. You don't just... It's not like you can. It's not like you have an attack button and then no targets to attack. If you have viable targets, or if your tank is in a stance where it can shoot something, you'll have the attack button. It will snap to the closest target, and it will tell you both the odds of hitting and the odds of damaging, forcing a morale check or destroying a vehicle, and say if you see that, oh, I'm getting a plus one or a minus one because my vehicle is buttoned and because I'm in assault move, you can then switch around in your interface to make the vehicle unbutton and switch to standing instead of assault moving, and then the game will all recalculate odds for you. And that is very helpful. It's one of those things that we want in, say, a tabletop incarnation of ASL. Because, as we keep saying in this, I don't want to do the rules in my head. And that's why me and Kasa reviewed the Vassal module for 1985 Beneath an Iron Sky. Yes, it's a lovely module. It does a lot for you, but it's not a full video game. And the 1985 lovely rule book, well written. The author is responsive, does a lot. But it does a lot. And I wish a video game took a video game engine took care of their real big issues, and then I could be focused on doing a full echelon assault on 11 ACR to overrun and crush them, like all that good stuff. So,
exactly, because we have these computers that make life easier for us, and there's still so much bookkeeping and tracking kicked away back onto us as the gamer or consumer, and it's that thing about I didn't want to work. Logistics are important, but I don't want to be the guy who decides what rifle everyone gets or what cartridges and magazines and loadouts for squads. I don't find that interesting. I'm much more interested in like how the squad maneuvers and what choices they make in encountering combat and opponents, and like how they solve these friction points, rather than haha, you didn't realize you could have brought this along, you should have read more about it. Like, it's not.
Well, I think we came from other angles, but they're like, we're never gonna do miniature games on this podcast. But there is this thing called BattleTech, and BattleTech has an awesome community-driven project called MegaMech, which basically does all the maps, maneuvers, everything for you. You go into a match, and you'll see all the options arrayed before you in every impulse turn for every mech. So you don't have to remember whether your mech can punch or like do death from above attacks. And
your mech can always punch. I mean,
yeah. But if you want to play it with miniatures, I have no idea why would you? You'll have to remember all of those things yourself and do the drifting damage numbers and the crits that go from armor and other stuff. And I can't imagine doing that. So it's nice to see that Lock and Load embraces the digital with their tactical.
Yeah, and it lets you really dial down into the tactical side of it. It lets you experience these choices and live that, like a better word, fantasy, rather than being beholden to, all right, I want to play a game, all right, let's open the box, push all the tokens out, let's cut all the corners, let's cut all the
let's
21s.
Arrange all the scenario, and let's not forget to use the 2 pages of new rules that this module introduced.
Archer, get off the table. Archer, stop stealing the chits. All right, now we're gonna go and find the cat and get them back from the cat.
My major was swallowed by the kitty. and this game handles everything for you. Even the scenario rules, and because like we all know that we love scenario based stuff. It handles all the like scenario rules for you, so you don't have to remember that this battle is taking place in a foggy environment. Of course, if you are a dirty little wargamer and you want a more like a balanced match or something, you can do random battles. You don't have to rely on the scenarios in the modules themselves. But damn, there's quite a few of these scenarios, and there are sliders that increase for that change the force balance which way, one way or another, with the fudge around.
It's a nice way to count someone who maybe has more experience with the game than the other person. It doesn't completely eliminate, like, if you're better at setting up ambushes, you can't really toss that away, but apart from denying the opponent the ability to set them up. But it does help. It does go a bit of the way to sort of cover up those bonuses, or if you think the scenario should be more imbalanced, one way or another. Definitely.
So scenario, those scenario balance is a thing we can also discuss a little at least, because like the last scenario we played was your American blocking force against my Soviet remnants, and by Soviet remnants I mean two OBRDMs with AT missiles, one BMP-1, and 90-72s arrayed against a variety of American infantry. Two or three M113s and ITO and three Abramses. Now, the issue here is that Abramses can shoot and penetrate a T-72 at any range on the map, while the T-72s can't penetrate the Abrams frontally from basically any range, at least as I've seen in the game. And you really need to get those flanking or back shots, though. God damn it. Like, I had two or three tanks shooting at one of Cassius Abrams literally from the back, but since he started rotating the turret, it was always just stunned, 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 nothing. The only Abrams I nailed in the game was him moving an Abrams almost as far across the map as he could, and then he turned his side to my guy, and I was like, hey, 58% chance to hit, 48.2% to penetrate, or something like that. I was like, yeah, I'm going to take that chance. And I miraculously rolled that, and the tank exploded. The AT rocket, the AT missiles did nothing, because after the modifiers and stuff, they're like 8% to penetrate, and ATGMs run out in the grand tradition of these games. Artillery merely inconveniences Abramses. So yeah, you can talk a little about the gameplay balance in these games.
And also a lot comes down to just, you know,
just luck, reflecting dice rolls.
The luck and dice rolls, and this is the reality situation. Like that scenario I set up thinking Dent would be approaching from one side of the board, and he wasn't. So my guys had their butts to the enemy. Like, that was probably a bit silly. Should have thought about that a bit more. And my inexperience and unfamiliarity with the mechanics and the representation of units really came into play.
Though I will say this, that the Luck and Load Publishing understands, I guess, the role that dice rolls play in these games, because at the end of the match, you don't only get the results sheet that shows who destroyed who died when, but also which player rolled how many of each, like, dice results, so you'll know how many ones you rolled and everything. So if you really want to say that dice fucked me on this one, you can go into the results and see.
I mean, I operate extensively on feelings, not facts, when it comes to results, so I don't need to be told if I'm wrong or right. I know what happened. I know what I remember happening. You can't gaslight me with notation.
So yeah, and as we mentioned before, and this is like one of the more fun and important parts of our podcast, is mentioning all the modules you can get for the game.
How many modules?
So,
There's four rule updates, so 19.
Well, that's the thing, that the DLCs are split between, like, how you might say, settings and then battle packs. So, like, for example, Heroes of Normandy is, you know what it is, but it has like three battle packs, and each of them for $8 on Steam, and I think they're worth the value. And
it is frustrating, honestly, straight up, that the game only comes with four scenarios.
Yeah, well, it's a taster, I guess.
Yeah, it is, the game is also cheaper than almost any of the scenario packs, though, so you get what you get.
Yeah, yeah. And also, Days of Villainy, the Libya Battle Pack is only like $4, but that's because it only has 4 scenarios, which is weird, but maybe they'll release more later on.
The splitting of battle packs is interesting because, you know, the tabletop wasn't split that way. It was just Heroes of Normandy from memory. So it's odd to me that they couldn't fit it all in one thing, but also their time and energy is expensive and it's a lot of stuff to build in. I can't imagine they can just scan in the pictures or import the PNG that they've got for print versions.
But they need to do all the rule conversion and the scenario stuff. And again, at this point, they have like at least six battle packs along the way, including one for zombies and and one for space infantry.
I'm so excited for space infantry. You have no idea. Also, I will say that $218 Australian for the entirety of it, all of it released so far for like this level of groggy game, when that's kind of like a single box of any other like printable cardboard wargame in Oz, is like, it's not a huge thing. It's a lot up front. I respect that. I'm not gonna deny that. The price is, you know, but if you're only interested in playing Heroes of Normandy, it's $20 to play that straight away. And then you've got the sunk cost fallacy kicks in. And then, hey, you want to get the Heroes of the Rhine Battle Pack, and then get the, you know, Valor of 13th and Enemy of the Gates, like an Eastern Europe Warfare. Like, you know, it's simple logical steps.
I don't think we have a different section for this, but I love how Lock and Load Publishing is open mouth kissing digital distribution of stuff. For example, World at War 85. If you want to, you can buy the whole gosh darn physical game at €114, or you can buy the €45 companion book, which has just the rules and none of the chips and maps and anything. Why would you do that? Because they have an official vassal module which contains the rest of the game. So you get the digital game, you play it on the digital battletop, and the only thing you need to buy is the physical rule set, because the developers would love to be paid in some way. And
that's fair.
Also, if you are somewhat insane, you can not just play it on Vassal. There's also a fairly well-programmed the tabletop simulator module. It has all the expansions and the solo assistant.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting.
Yeah, like some developers in like this area, and I guess all the hobbies are like, ew, digital. I don't want to do anything. Ooh, giving stuff to players for free, and these guys are like, yeah, play your game. Vassal, yeah. Tabletop simulator, don't care. Want to play physical? Fine, pay me money. So there's, it's a very modern, it's a refreshingly modern take on this business. Like, you can go on their website. Their website actually looks nice. Yeah. I've had the unfortunate of recently visiting the, how'd you call them? Games Workshop new website, and awful. Garbage. Absolutely not fun to use. And this is like, yeah, welcome here. We have bootcamp training. We have pre-orders, online library, tabletop simulator modules, and Steam games as separate category. You want some resources? You want a Discord? Go get us. We exist on every social media platform under the sun.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I know it's hard to break into, and it has a lot of costs that are difficult to avoid or even try to sort of work around. But if you can sort of find the people who can set you up with this, who can get it started, if you're willing to invest in this, it feels to me as a consumer, much more of an approachable way to get these games.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you weren't waiting for GMT to do another fucking P500 sale of the game, and you're waiting 6 or 8 years for it to finally, goddamn, enough people to buy, like, and day in a business or something. Be like, you can finally get a copy.
Yeah. You know, save a few trees, play it on Vassal. So, that's generally quite fun. And I guess here we reach the award-winning of our podcast episode, the compliment sandwich. So, you start.
Look, genuinely, sincerely and thoroughly, the automation of the game is truly so, it feels so good. Everything is there to get you making the tactical decisions, as opposed to trying to find where in the GUI your squaddies crouch and slow crawl rather than dead sprint through the opening. It's a simple toggle in the shortcut keys, also incredibly easy to remember, rather than, all right, now you're prone, you've got to stand up, and I've got to go into your inventory and make sure you've got the magazine in hand so you can reload. It's like, no, just fuck that. Just push button. Do the thing.
Yeah, the contextual interface is very cool. It's like, I don't have to remember all the bajillion options I have at any point, and it's calculating the probabilities for you, and it's doing all the heavy lifting, so you can, you know, focus on the fun stuff, which is seeing tanks explode and running guys over or something. Kudos to that. There is some system mastery in this game, but there is a system mastery in every game. But it definitely removes a lot of the headaches that you usually associate with games.
Yeah, it's also incredibly simple to teach. Like, once your opponent, you know, it's point and click, basically. And as long as they understand how selecting a squad or a squad weapon or a group of squads or the hero, commander, leader is done, that's most of the game. There's a bunch of little tiny things about, like, rotating vehicles, which isn't super intuitive. And you have to be forgiving of your opponent. Like, oh, I didn't mean to rotate. Please don't shoot me. Like, okay, that's fine. You know, it costs you the move, but I'm not going to take the opportunity fire because you made a mistake. Like, and that's just, you know,
and opportunity fire is like a very good opportunity to talk about how friendly the devs are towards different kinds of gamers, because before you play the scenario, there is a toggle whether your opportunity fire will be automatic, which is you'll be presented with the chance to do opportunity fire every time there is an chance to do opportunity fire, or it can be prompted, which means that you have to react a little and sometimes click the button to be like, hey, next time there's an opportunity fire opportunity, I guess, let me do it. So if you want to be, if you want the game to be more, I don't know, skill based or something, or you just you know that you're doing an ambush and you know that the other guy is going to be doing like 500 moves that you're not going to want to react next turn, so You play with prompted, because, like, you know, if the enemy gets the deciding opportunity fire prompt once they're moving, when they don't see any enemies nearby, they'll know that somebody's seeing them move. So if you like your games to be like more suspenseful like that, you just do prompted opportunity movement, and there's really and there's absolutely nothing in the way of like, oh, the kids these days, they all want games to be easy. Oh, nobody wants to think these days. Why don't you do your own math? We're adding the calculator to the game instead of doing stuff for you.
God.
No,
oh,
it's absolutely user and newbie friendly. If the only way it could be any more friendly if it was like a video game and had a voiced tutorial in it. And as I mentioned, combat mission. Not all video games have a voice tutorial in them. So, yeah.
What would your positive be?
Yeah. I'm trying to narrow down. Okay. It looks good. I think it looks good. Aside from some of the portraits, the guy on Heroes of Normandy module is going to haunt me. It's very good looking. Lock and Load Publishing really puts a lot of thought, I think, into making a beautiful chit. And like, if I'm just browsing stuff, looking at World at War modules, I see those chits and I'm like, oh, I wanna play World at War '85. Oh, that's a good looking chit. And yeah, the stuff looks good in the game, and they bothered to add such thing as particle effects. So if you have smoke and stuff, or tanks exploding, it's not just a token that a tank exploding or that there's smoke. You're gonna get, smoke stacks rising, say, from that token. And it adds so much to the battlefield, and it's really, really nice.
It's... Yeah, honestly... Yeah, you take it for granted a lot of times, these simple things like particle effects and like visual cues for things. Like, it's never so much that like it gets in the way. It's never so much you're like, just hurry up, finish. It's more like, oh, it's a tiny little boom or some gunfire to sort of draw your attention the way that you need to be looking anyway. So it works really well.
Yeah, so what would be something that you don't like about Lock and Load Tactical Digital?
Oh my god, it's so fucking loud. It's so loud, and the audio is not great. Oh, sorry, the audio is fine. The audio is mostly gunfire unit barks, like, I don't know, machine guns, or look out, or jump on that grenade. But I don't give a fuck. I don't need to hear gunfire every 30 seconds in this game. It's like, oh, I'm thinking, oh shit, the loudest fucking tank shreds in the world just move through my head, through my eardrums. Like, hey, it makes for a feeling of like you being in this nightmare, but also no.
I actually don't mind the background gunfire and stuff, because it's meant to represent that there's always something happening on the battlefield, and it's not just like, hey, nobody's shooting right now, it's real boring on the battlefield, your troops are dying from boredom. But oh my god, the audio levels. The audio levels are off the chart, and if you're trying to play with a friend online, because like it's the kind of game you can play online, it's not great. On the other hand, it's fairly easy to get an online game going. So I guess it's time for my own complaint.
Yeah.
I guess if I can choose, I don't know if I can choose it, but the early accessness of it all. I think the game has plenty of modules right now to let the players coast for quite some time. So I'd like to see the kinks, as they say, ironed out, so that the game would be without all the small indignities and annoyances of like stuff getting stuck. Or And the worst thing I think we both encountered is your impulse not auto-ending when your unit doesn't have anything else to do at that point.
Yeah, having to click pass every single time is a nightmare, and it sucks.
If my unit doesn't have anything else to do, just auto-end the impulse for me, because like I can't roll back, I can't really do anything else. So just... like, yeah, do it for me. And again, if I have no units capable of actions, like, please end it for me. And we haven't played that much of the physical Lock and Load tactical, so I can't say whether, so I don't really remember whether whether you can decide post fact whether a unit will be in continuous movement or not. But it's certainly something that the game insists is possible to do outside of the units after the unit finish their turn. So yeah, I just want to see all those bugs ironed out. And even if they don't fix the AI, because at least at this point, AI is still insisting on moving on stacks, and then the stack gets lit up once, and like, oh wow, it's four chits rolling their morale at once. Remove those things, and you probably don't even need to take care about the AI because you're playing with a friend.
Yeah, and like your friend will also let you say, like, since the tabletop version, I can't imagine someone sitting there and asking you to say, would you like to do something? Once it's clear, you have nothing else to do. If it's just, I'm going to move all my guys now and you can't reactive fire, like, okay, I'm going to get a beer or a drink or a chip packet. Do you want something? Can I get you something while you move your guys? And then if you cheat, then that's shitty of you. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here and watch you play out fucking 10 minutes of no interaction.
Yeah. There's really no... there's really none of that blood bowl. Oh, you didn't move the turn counter, you piece of garbage person. Thing. Yeah. So what's the second thing you like about this game?
It's. I mean, one thing was enough, wasn't it? So. It's the breadth of scenarios. Their willingness to call the Nazis out as being useless Nazis too is pretty cool. Not enough games do that.
Mm.
Being like, yeah, the SS were just crazy obsessives about it rather than being actually better than anyone. They get no mechanical benefits apart from re-rolling morale because they were, you know, believers.
Yeah.
Unlike some historical war games that are like, oh yeah, and they get better guns and better morale and is better because that's what the books we read from the Germans about it said, so why would they lie to us?
Yeah, I like the other thing that when you're like, they don't, at least not in the scenario the descriptions I've seen, they don't depersonalize or dehumanize the enemies, like even if you're say doing a scenario where you're fighting Viet Cong or like the Mujahideen, it's like, oh, the Mujahideen, like, you know, went over to a town, the locals treated them to like dinner, then they went to sleep, and it's the morning, the Soviets are ambushing, and it's not like we're gonna face the endless hordes of the faceless Viet Cong and we're just going to shoot them, and you're commanding the troops of the Charlie platoon of the dipshit company of the 6th regiment marine Kurahi, whatever, while the Viet Cong is just the Viet Cong, you know. I'm the private in the Viet Cong, my whole unit is called Viet Cong. No, it will be like shot. Yeah, it's just they will have like their proper title, like 6th regiment of the 5th local division and stuff. So there is a I don't know, a good and healthy perspective on the history and the people involved.
Yeah, it doesn't ignore that, like, both sides kind of thought they were like the heroes of their stories, except, you know, the Nazis, who were just all losers. It's fair, because like modern historical warfare in general, really, is just a series of horrible things happening to countries all over the world. And the ones that move past the Second World War take a fairly even-handed approach to both sides.
Mm.
Like, there's no, well, the Soviets are all bad because they're always Soviets. It's more like they weren't great, but neither were the Mujahideen. So, obviously, one side was worse than the other side, you know, down with imperialism.
Yeah,
it gives them a chance. It gives them space to sort of almost talk for themselves and just focus on that. It's tactical gameplay, not organizational level. Like, you aren't making decisions about why you're there. You just are.
Yeah. For my second compliment, well, I already mentioned that the game looks nice, and we already talked about how I guess friendly to newbies it is. Narrowing it down ain't easy, but The tanks exploding is nice. I like, okay, this is going to be a small thing, but I like the line of sight string tool.
Yeah. And like equally not, the terrain modifiers being so clear is also good.
Yeah, the line of sight string tool, which you can measure from like any hex to any hex to see like whether it will show you what the hexes are visible from which hex, and then like the terrain modifiers if you were trying to fire to another hex. Wonderful, very helpful. Not all video games combat mission have that, and they should, and this game has it, and it's like another way of the developers saying like, hey guy, we like it that you're playing our game. You don't need to be system master. There's no system mastery in being able to see like, oh, there's like seven hexes away, and then there's an archer than this one. So it's like, if they,
you forgot that archers block tank line of sight. You fool, you buffoon. Good thing I remembered. I could hide my whole army behind it. Like, what? Why? That's
yeah. If anybody ever like kidnaps a whole bunch of programmers to make a full on Nothing's Left Out advanced squad leader computer adaptation, I hope they add this in.
I mean, this game would be a terrible starting point. It already has an ASL to lock and load tactical like guidebook. So, I mean, adding the scenarios, I mean, the scenario builder is there.
Yeah. So, in the end, would you, Casa, play Lock and Load Advanced, Lock and Load Tactical Digital if you had to buy it again?
Well, I mean, yeah, because we get to play it with you, and playing games with you is pretty cool.
Aww, and the game itself is fairly nice. And I'm going to, and I'm going to say yes, I'd buy it to play it. I didn't have to. I have a digital review copy that is automatically updated with every released battle pack and stuff. For me, so that is extremely nice of the developers. Not all of them do that, and really, looking at how user friendly and digital forward all their releases is, it's
nice to play war games that don't involve like a whole bunch of hobby stuff too.
Yeah,
just sitting down and like, click the button and go. All right, you've got to organize to both have the same day off, and you've got to organize to both have everything complete and ready to go. And you've got to organize to both have read all of the rules. Knowing the rules of the game is important.
And you have to shackle the cat with the ball and chain, and you have to make sure there's no air movement in the room.
Yep, and put on Taylor Swift Eras Tour for your partners so they can be distracted and not ask questions about why you're sitting around a table with your friend rather than drinking.
Yes. So yeah, great game. Would and will play again, hopefully.
Yeah, check out Lock and Load Tactical Digital on Steam.
Yeah,
that's 3 years ago.
And I guess next time we're going to do another perennial fan favorite, literal command at Indo-Pacific. It's making waves in the military academy circle.
Okay, podcast over.
Okay, at this point we can probably break kayfabe because we've been doing it nicely at this point. But April Fools, we've had this game for a long time and we decided to do it and. It wasn't an easy road to getting there, but I guess we'll leave the backstory of how we arrived at this game being our April's Fool episode in the Patreon special.
Oh, yeah, sure. Enjoy the shortest episode we've done so far.
Hey, it's going to cover other games as well, but at least I'll have something to say about games that got chosen and then rejected for various reasons.
Yeah, there is there's a lot of this one.
Yeah. Next time we're going to do something decisively less serious and more fun. I'm hoping for Gaslands, but we'll see. Well, yeah. Considering the release schedule, next episode to be released is. Yeah, then it's going to be Force of Valor, or Strength of Valor, or Valor on Valor. But then we're going to do something sillier, and yeah, it's just that publishing schedule got a little weird with like games having their own release needs, and us having the writer to you
have stipulations.
Yes. So yeah, it's been a pleasure doing this. I'm glad we have the listenership that appreciates it all. And I'm glad to have Casa because, man, going at this alone would be very weird.
Yeah, hard joke to sustain for that long by yourself.
Yep. So thanks to Casa. Thanks to everyone listening. Thanks to Surf and all the others that made this podcast happen. And we'll see you in the
next time.
Slightly more serious episode. Bye, everyone.